This Focus with Paul W. Smith podcast is sponsored by Victor's Home Solutions. Visit victors.com, experts in home solutions.
It's Monday, and I hope you had a spectacular weekend. It was a great weekend all the way around. Well, other than on the international world scene, but we'll get to that. Right now, sunny with 62 degrees on our way to 70. And these sunny conditions are going to continue for the rest of the day. Wind gusts are up to 8 miles per hour. Nothing like they were early on at the Masters, where it was pretty doggone windy. But it ended nicely for Scotty Scheffler. His second green jacket with an 11-under score of 68. Followed by this Ludvig Aberg, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, from Sweden, young kid. Was in second place. Tommy Fleetwood came up quick and got third. Max Homa, Colin Morikawa, Cameron Smith, Bryson DeChambeau, Xander Schauffele, and Will Zalatoris, who Will was in there for a while, but then he kind of fell apart.
It got Tyrell crazy. It got crazy. You know, I did my homework assignment, and I was checking in on it throughout the weekend.
Good.
Yeah, it... I mean, there was that five-way tie on Saturday, and then there was a three-way tie on Sunday. And then I remember I left to go to the store, and I come back, and Scotty Scheffler's at 11-under, and everyone else is falling behind. It's like must have gone south for a lot of people.
It must have, and I missed that too. I was watching, and then I was running around doing some stuff, and then I came back and went, wait a minute. There was a three-way tie, and now these other guys are way far, so they must have you know, this is a big deal, and you get the jitters, or if something goes wrong, it goes way wrong, and boy, everything went well for Scotty. I was waiting at any moment, because he said he would do it, that if his wife went into labor, he was leaving. He didn't care what was going on the course. I love the fact that he said what was most important to him was the birth of their first child. He wants to win the Masters. He wanted to win it, and thank God he did, but the most important thing is if his wife went into labor, he had to get to an airport, get to a plane, and get to his wife to be there. I thought that was fabulous.
Yeah, and when that kid's a teenager, that story will make him or her roll their eyes. But they'll grow to appreciate it when they're adults themselves.
Yeah, and we haven't heard anything because the fact of the matter is the wife might have said, no, don't call him. No, he's out to win the Masters. Don't call him. You have no idea.
Right, maybe if he was like five back, they would have called him, but he was in the lead, so they said, all right, just let him finish.
Yeah, but we haven't heard anything, so hopefully he got back home in time to be there for that very special moment. All right, let's see. Underway, the first former president facing a criminal trial, Matthew Schneider, leader of investigations, white-collar defense practice at Honigman Law, former U.S. attorney of the Eastern District of Michigan, will weigh in on that in just minutes at 12:18. We will wait for his learned opinion on what's going on. Also going on right now, there are protesters shutting down the Golden Gate Bridge. It's blocked by anti-Israel protests. And there are more people cheering for Iran attacking Israel than I ever would have guessed. And more people chanting death to Israel. And in this country, as we know, it happened on a smaller scale but made big news in Dearborn, death to America. Now, I got to ask you something. If I hated a place so much that I would say death to that place, why would I live there?
Right. I mean, you know, there's always constructive criticism and wanting things to be better, but that's way beyond the pale. Yeah, if
death to America is way beyond the pale of trying to fix whatever errors you feel might have happened or might be happening. Death to America. Yeah, well. Iran unleashed a barrage of missiles and drones on Israel over the weekend. Can someone tell me, and it's going to have to be you, Mike, or Danielle, or even Rich Luzinski with our WJR Traffic and Weather First. That is, whatever happened to surprise attacks, you know, like Pearl Harbor?
Well, I was wondering that, too, because Iran gave like a 2-day heads up that something was coming.
Right.
And then they launched the drones and said
they were lit up. They had lights on them so you could see them easier to shoot them out of the sky.
And they said, oh, the drones will be there in a couple hours. And so everything I was hearing from the experts was, well, this was more of a political message than a military message. But, I mean, what was it, 170 drones, 120 missiles? It's like that's a lot of artillery to just send a message.
Yeah, that's a big message.
And I think, five got through. Most of them hit that base in southern Israel with minimal damage. One child was injured with the shrapnel from an intercept. But other than that, Israel was pretty much unscathed with that Iron Dome and the help from Jordan and the U.S. and the U.K.
You know, something I learned on one of my visits to Israel and when we did a broadcast from there was something we had never heard, that the Patriot missile system that we provided Israel, frankly, and they never complained, but frankly did as much damage as it did good, because what would happen is these trash can scuds that were being sent over into Israel were being blasted out of the sky by the Patriot missiles and raining down all kinds of trouble on the land below. So you didn't hear a word about any Patriot missiles, did you? You hear the Iron Dome and you hear some of the other things they've got, but you don't hear about Patriot missiles anymore. And I never would have known that, and maybe America wouldn't have known it, except we were there the broadcast.
I mean, so, they said that most of those missiles didn't even make it to an Israeli airspace, so they had to have come down in the other surrounding countries, which a lot of the surrounding countries are on the side of Iran, so it sounded like it was very counterproductive.
Well, and a lot of other countries joined in shooting down some of those missiles that had never done it before from the Mideast. So, I mean, if you're looking for a positive, that was a positive. The part that's I love this. Senator Kennedy said on the air today, Mr. President, don't. He says it with that southern kind of whatever accent he has.
The drawl.
Mr. President, don't. Playing off of the president saying don't to Iran, and they ignored him completely. And then he said, Mr. President, go to Amazon and buy a spine online.
With the promo code.
Yeah, my goodness. Buy a spine online anyway. But then to say, we will defend Israel, but we will not help them if they counterattack. We're not going to talk about that right now. Of course, former President Donald Trump making history today. He has arrived at the courthouse, first ex-president to go on trial for criminal charges. We're going to talk about that, as I mentioned, in a moment. Today is tax day.
Yay! No, just kidding.
Wait, what the? And you can get an extension on the paperwork, but you got to best you can figure out how much you owe if you owe and pay that today. You don't get a break on that for today. And there was some word, too, in one of our papers talking about people who were affected by stormage.
Yeah, I'm looking for that right now. But, yeah, if you're affected by the August 2023 storms, that was that night where we had, seven tornadoes?
Yeah.
You can delay filing income taxes until June 17th. You have until June 17th to file if you were affected by those tornadoes in any way.
Well done, Michael. And speaking of bad weather, more than 40 million people across parts of the central and eastern United States are now, right now, at risk of severe storms today. We have, at this point, dodged that bullet. That's certainly good to know. And what was the weather like in Boston for the Boston Marathon? Was it okay? Do we know?
I'll have to do a quick Google. Boston weather. It is 61 and sunny. So I'm not a runner, but that sounds like pretty good running weather.
It sounds like great running weather if you and I were runners. Very good. 2024 WNBA draft will be held today. Of course, everybody's waiting to see Caitlin Clark drafted, first overall pick, blah, blah, blah. Fascinating. All good news. There's a lot going on. Not all of it's good, but we try to accentuate the positive, relentless positive radio here in Focus with Paul W. Smith at WJR. Well, unless you live in a cave, and if you do, and you can say Manhattan is where you live, they want you for the jury. but they're not going to get you for the jury. Donald Trump's New York criminal trial beginning today, the jury selection, a number of factors will go into the jury selection. We have an expert to help us, the all-around good guy, Matthew Schneider, leader of investigations and white-collar defense practice at Honigman Law, of course, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. And we're leaning on you, Matthew, for some of your expertise as they put this whole thing together. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul W. Thanks for having me back. And there's plenty to talk about, and it'll take some time because even the jury selection here is going to take at least a couple days, if not a couple weeks, to get through before this trial even starts. So there's lots to talk about.
All of the members of the jury must, at the very least, live in Manhattan, speak English, be at least 18, and not have a felony conviction. And they're going to be asked a wide range of questions. They're going to be grilled, I guess, by the lawyers, and the lawyers are going to try to weed out those that they don't want to have on the jury.
That's correct. It's really not about jury selection. It's kind of jury deselection. You're identifying people who are put into that jury box that both parties are trying to remove to strike them off the panel. And in that process, they ask them all these questions. Now, some of these are really standard questions, like you alluded to, that everybody gets. And some of those questions will be very unique because this is an extremely unique case. We've never had something like this before. So they'll be asked about their political leanings and those types of things, unlike in a normal case.
Well, I have much more on this, but Matthew, I need to tell our listeners this breaking news. General Motors is going to move its global headquarters to the Hudson's Detroit development while it works with Dan Gilbert's real estate firm to redevelop the Renaissance Center.
Well, that's pretty amazing, and I think a lot of people would agree that's great for downtown because they're still going to be in that downtown area, and that's helpful for the city.
The announcement is to be officially made at a 4:30 news conference at the under-construction former J.L. Hudson's department store site, which is expected to open this year. So that's pretty big news. It would have been bad news had we not connected that story to the story that they will, General Motors, will work with Dan Gilbert and his real estate firm to make sure that the Renaissance Center does not become this hulking, empty eyesore. They're not going to let that happen. It's too big. It's too important. But it makes more sense, apparently, for General Motors to move their global headquarters to the Hudson's Detroit development. Official word coming at 4:30 this afternoon. And I'm sure Chris Renwick will have more on that as we get closer. You know what? It occurs to me, unfortunately, with the way things go now, Matthew Schneider with us, there are going to be people who will do anything to be on this trial. Because to them, it is the closest they'll ever come to becoming a huge celebrity able to write a book that might make them lots of money. So there are people who are going to lie. There are people who also feel that they will be superstars in their neighborhood if they can say they were on the jury that convicted Donald Trump, because there are so many haters out there of Donald Trump. What do you do about that?
Well, there are also people who probably want to be on there so that Donald Trump doesn't get convicted. Either way, that is precisely what jury selection is about, trying to identify these people who, if they want to be on the jury, that's a problem. Those aren't the type of people, because this isn't an election, it's a jury trial. So there are so many different questions. There are 42 written questions plus subparts. All of those questions are being asked by Mr. Trump's lawyers and by the prosecutions to get at exactly what you're talking about, Paul W., is let's find jurors who are only focusing on this case and not the next election.
Well, it's going to be tough because they actually ask the jurors if they can be fair and impartial, and if they cannot, they'll be dismissed. But that's a question that nobody can judge if they're telling the truth or not, if they feel they can be fair and impartial. They'll be asked what podcasts and talk radio programs they listen to, where they get their news. They'll be asked if they follow any anti-Trump groups or support any right-wing groups like the Proud Boys. There's a lot of questions, and we have to depend on these folks being honest and then putting it together. Now, what is it? You get 10 people as a lawyer on both sides. You each can say, I don't want this person, without any cause or reason. You can just say, I don't want them on the jury.
That'll be a little larger here because of the significance and the number of people in the jury pool, but that's essentially right. Some of the people will be struck off of this jury for what's called for cause, which means they're biased one way or the other, and they can't serve. The other ones, you could strike them for any reason, and as long as it's not an unconstitutional reason, the lawyers can strike them off. For example, whenever I pick a jury, I strike off all the lawyers because they think they're smarter, and they're not.
I love to hear a lawyer say that.
Exactly.
That's kind of funny. Okay, so you strike all the lawyers. Who else would you automatically strike?
Oftentimes people strike off students, people who might be younger and not experienced. Now, this is a case that involves business records, business dealings, dealing with lawyers, high-profile people. Sometimes lawyers will say, you know, these students, they haven't even graduated yet. They're eligible to be on the jury, but we don't want them because they haven't seen some of these things in the real world. So a lot of lawyers strike those people off. A lot of lawyers strike off people who might be sympathetic to one way or the other because they think that that's not an advantageous way for them to go about it.
Is this a normal procedure? We're with Matthew Schneider, leader of investigations and white-collar defense practice at Honigman Law, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. Is it normal in the draw that Trump would get the same judge that dealt with him in his tax fraud trial in 2022? Is that normal? I mean, there are a lot of judges they could have chosen from.
There are, but it's a random draw, and that does happen. And in fact, you know, sometimes people will get judges drawn for two or three cases in a row. That's not unusual. And what's important, it's not necessarily nefarious. Just because that happened doesn't mean anything illegal took place.
What's your gut on how this thing's going to go? First of all, do you believe it should be happening at all?
Well, it is happening. We can't prevent that. I can tell you, however it turns, it's going to be long. This isn't going away anytime soon, and we'll be watching this for the next several weeks, if not months.
Well, then we'll be leaning on you, if that's okay.
Happy to help.
Thank you so much. You always do. Matthew Schneider, all-around good guy, leader of investigations and white-collar defense practice at Honigman Law, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. You'll hear his concise view on this case as it gets started today with jury selection and probably for the next couple of days, as we continue in focus on WJR. Two is very significant. It's just occurred to me, two very significant Mr. Rogers in my life. The first was Fred Rogers, who I had the pleasure of flying into Pittsburgh at their public broadcasting and to his set, if you will, his neighborhood, and did a television show with him so many years ago when I was in Toledo. And then this Mr. Rogers, it happens to be Mike Rogers, the veteran, former FBI agent, chairman of the U.S. Intelligence Committee, businessman, and, oh, by the way, a Republican Senate candidate, who I also appreciate and respect greatly. And in fact, I just had, by happenstance, have run into Mike Rogers, his lovely wife, Christy, a couple of times in the last few weeks. It's been my pleasure, Mike, and it's good to have you on the program again.
Paul, it's always my pleasure to bump into you, and I'm always wanting to be your neighbor, for sure.
Thank you for that. Well, you're a good neighbor. That's another story we'll share another time. I do need your expertise in this, and you have it on a federal and international level, and I want to hear what you have to say as to what just happened. We have Iran announcing they're going to attack Israel, giving Israel every bit of time they possibly can to get ready. And then they send over 200-300 drones and missiles and whatever that are literally lit up so they can be seen as they come and blown out of the sky. What in the world is going on?
Well, can I back up for 1 second and tell you how we got here?
Yeah.
So when the Biden administration got in, they did a couple of disastrous things. And they
what a surprise.
Set the tone, yeah, exactly, for us to be entangled in the Middle East versus being engaged in the Middle East. And so they gotten this argument, if you will, a diplomatic argument with Saudi Arabia. So they did two things. They said, guess what? We're going to stop your ability to go after the Houthis on their border in Yemen. And the Houthis are a proxy for Iran. And they were shooting missiles into Saudi Arabia. And the Biden administration said, nope, you're not going to allow it. We're not going to allow you to do that. And not only that, but we're going to take Yemen off of the terrorist list. At the same time, they allowed Iran, the Biden administration allowed Iran to go ahead and get oil into the market, which meant billions of dollars of cash to Iran, which ended up in the Houthis and Hezbollah and Hamas and some of the Shia militias in Iraq. And then on top of that, you had the disastrous pullout in Afghanistan that just showed that the administration is prone to mistakes. How about that? I'll be very charitable.
Yeah, you're being very kind.
And what happened is all of those decisions had real consequences. And it leads up to the fact that when Iran said that they were going to attack Israel, we should have gone nuts. We should have at least made them think twice about this. And I'll tell you why. Israel didn't attack Iran. They attacked Iranian proxies, well, their Quds Force, which is their CIA and special forces combined, in Syria, planning attacks with Hezbollah to come after Israel. I know that sounds complicated, but all of that that stirring of that pot happened from bad decision after bad decision after bad decision, and it got us exactly where we are today. And if this is the big one, and I saw the headline today, if the Biden administration actually gave them a wink and a nod to launch an attack unprecedented, they've never attacked Israel before, Iran, then we have a huge problem, because now you've opened it up to every proxy group out there to say, I have a grievance. I'm going to attack Israel. This is really mind-blowingly bad. And we didn't have to be here. That's the crazy thing about it.
Well, that is crazy, and we shouldn't be, but we are. And Israel, on their own, April 1st, they attacked an area they generally, it's, you know, rules in war are ridiculous because it's war and it's horrific. And to have rules means that you have some kind of semblance of courtesy to each other. It makes no sense. But they attacked a diplomatic compound traditionally exempt from hostilities. And they went after targets that were seniority-wise very high up there. And this is kind of new, which is why then Iran said, well, we're going to attack. But everything since then has been kind of ridiculous. I doubt very much Israel announced that they were going to attack this diplomatic area in Syria. And yet everything else since then has been announced so that everyone can get ready for it. And they didn't really attack Israel in a way one would have guessed if they were trying to really harm Israel. It's too bizarre to me. Yeah. I don't quite understand what's going on over there now.
Yeah, well, it's crazy. And let me talk about the attack into Syria. And yes, it was at a diplomatic compound, but they were using it for military operations, terrorist operations, to conduct operations against Israel. That's one of the reasons that Israel believed that they needed to attack that particular place. And remember, they killed Quds Force commanders. That's that CIA Special Forces group that is, by the way, responsible for killing U.S. troops in Iraq, maiming hundreds of U.S. troops in Iraq, supplying the proxies, again, all of the attacks that have been happening across the Middle East against U.S. bases, and there's been well over 100. All came from the Quds Force, all came from these Quds Force commanders. And so it wasn't like there wasn't some extraordinary circumstances. And think about it. If you're already fighting Hamas, paid for by Iran, And now you have Quds Force trying to engage Hezbollah on their northern border to conduct operations against Israel. This was that proactive strike I think they believe they needed to make in order to stop those operational planning. And I think that's really important to put into context.
Well, it is. And the our military forces did indeed shoot down a bunch of Iranian drones and missiles. But the president has made it clear that that's about what we'll do and nothing more. If Israel responds, I don't know how they don't respond. I mean, it's really, it's going. I just wish we weren't in the middle of it. But let's face it. When was the last time stuff was happening in the Middle East that we weren't in the middle of it?
Yeah, and we don't have to be. Engaged does not mean in the middle of it. Entangled absolutely does. The Biden administration has gotten us entangled in the Middle East.
Yeah, well, there's so many bad decisions. It's almost, it's not laughable, but it's almost, it's unbelievable, I guess is a better way to put it. Mike Rogers, a former FBI agent, chairman of the U.S. Intelligence Committee, businessman, Republican Senate candidate, veteran. RogersForSenate.com. RogersForSenate.com. A good place for you to visit to support Mike Rogers. Thank you, Mike.
Hey, thanks, Paul. It was great to see you the other night. Take care now.
It was great running into you. I ran into him twice, in fact. Yeah, that's unusual, but it was all good. As we continue in focus on WJR. Well, it was a great Masters. It started off really very windy, and that caused some problems leading into the weekend. But the weekend, Sunday, yesterday, I don't think it could have been any nicer. And Scottie Scheffler felt the same with an 11 under 68 and a second green jacket. Jordan Young, golf performance coach at Jordan Young Golf and co-host of WJR's Spin on Golf, which had their first Sunday night broadcast at 6 o'clock last night, started the season off in style. Jordan, way to go.
Yeah, thanks, Paul Dye, for having us on. It was a good night. The seas seemed apart for Mr. Scheffler, and I think the only thing that could stop him was the was maybe the birth of his first child, but that didn't happen either.
I was waiting, and I believe him when he said, no matter what was happening, he was leaving right away, catch a plane, wants to be there for the birth of his first child. And I was nervous. I was thinking, oh, my gosh, he's so close to winning. What if they call him right now? But I have a feeling they probably wouldn't have.
I think his wife probably would have faked him out on that one and maybe said, don't worry about it. But, yes, yeah, it was crazy. But how about the weather there? The wind, the first 2 days, the drama with Jason Day's pants flying away, and then
wait a minute. I didn't see it from the very beginning. How did I miss somebody's pants? Jason Day's pants flying away.
Well, not only his pants, but his sweater on day three. The tournament committee had to come up to him and ask him to remove his vest because the Malbon brand wasn't making the cut. So yeah, it was pretty interesting. That was another side topic.
Wow. Well, listen. Yeah. Nobody does it like the members of Augusta National. They maintain an iron fist. I probably can never be a member just by saying this. They maintain an iron fist and complete control over everything. So in a sense, it doesn't surprise me, but I hadn't heard that. It's kind of like, you know, many years ago when I was working in New York, I came upon Jimmy the Greek down at a bodega. And I knew that right then and there, there was some kind of an NCAA tournament or whatever. And I said, Greek, what are you doing down here? They're playing basketball right now. And he goes, yeah. I go for the last 10 minutes. And I thought, you know, it's, you know, I know a lot of people watch the Masters from the moment they can till the end. I was not able to do that, but I was able to see Saturday and Sunday. And I was astonished that we had one, two, three, what, four guys all at six under par at one point on the front nine. Mm-hmm. That was just incredible.
Yeah, it was looking to be a pretty cool back nine. And then, you know, Morikawa, I believe he doubled 9 and 10. And so he tipped off the board. And then a couple other guys made some bogeys. I think at one point Scheffler made a bogey. I can't remember what hole it was. It might have been nine. And he still had a three-shot lead because everybody was falling off. And then you know, the famous back nine at Augusta on Sunday, we were hoping for something, and it just didn't happen. But Scheffler, he's relevant right now. He is in his moment. He's in his time, and this is his, we'll call it his little tiger segment here, where he's just going to run for 2 or 3 years and just beat up on everybody.
Well, I'm hoping for him for the best. He seems, I don't know him, but he seems like a nice enough guy. I think Jim Nantz does a tremendous job. I wish he could stay there forever. I don't know that he will, but Jim Nantz did a great job. And they're very high on this. Do you pronounce the Swedish guy? Is it Åberg? How do you say
Åberg,
his name?
Åberg, yeah.
Åberg.
He's going to be ranked, number one in the world, I believe, in the next year or two. I'll say in 2 years he'll be number one in the world. He's that good. Just an awesome specimen, great swing, great young man. And, you know, Scheffler, too. I mean, his disposition is fabulous. I mean, they were saying yesterday he was, I didn't really hit it good here, didn't really hit it good there. And, yeah, I'm just going to go home. Like it was a Sunday at the country club and you just, you know, beat the four guys you played in your group and then you're going to leave, right? Nothing seems to faze him, even when in his second green jacket. It's just crazy how poised he is.
Well, and proudly bearing the Nike swoosh and nothing else, because I noticed that many of the golfers had a couple of different sponsors, clients, I guess he's kind of taken over where Tiger left off. That must have been, I'm sure you guys covered it at the time with the Spin on Golf on WJR Sundays at 6. They were at St. John's in Plymouth kicking it off last night. But to Jordan Young, it had to be a very tough decision all the way around when Nike decided they were done with Tiger Woods.
Well, the word is that Nike is not doing that great right now. So I don't know if that's just because of Tiger or not, but they'll have people to fill the void. I mean, you know, whether it's Jason Day or whether it's, you know, Scheffler, whoever it might be. But, I don't know. I mean, another storyline on that, Vern Lundquist, his last time at the Masters, that was pretty cool to see Tiger go and shake hands with him on 16 towards the end of his round. And that'll be it for Vern. So, iconic broadcaster saying his last to the Masters.
Oh, I never even knew that that backstory on that. Well, a lot of people have a lot of stories about Tiger, but I have to tell you, from my experience, which all came about thanks to the guys at Buick and the Buick Open, and the fact that I had interviewed Tiger's dad several years ago and was able to present Tiger through the Buick guys with the recording of that interview, I was golden from that point on. I was able to interview Tiger one-on-one in a little private area, and it was extra special. I wish I would have gotten a cell phone or something. I often do, but I never asked him. And then when he went through his hell, I just wanted to offer him some encouraging words and couldn't, because forget about trying to get to him through his agents or anybody else. That ain't ever going to happen. But did anyone pick up when he left Nike? Did anyone else say, "Well, we want you to represent us"? I don't even know. I didn't even notice if he was wearing anything, any brand names or anything.
Well, you know, he's got his own brand right now, so he's got his own attire on and Sunday Red, and it's kind of a interesting kind of cat type look to it. Looks like the backwards Slazenger logo from back in the day. I'm not really fond of it, but, Tiger moves the needle like nobody else. And that's his brand that's tied in with TaylorMade Golf and Popstroke, which he owns across the United States, the putt-putt facilities that are out there that are pretty cool. So,
I'm thrilled.
Tiger's going on his own.
I was thrilled to see a Bridgestone commercial with Tiger. Because Bridgestone is David Coletti and Bridgestone, such big supporters of my Paul W. Smith Golf Classic for all these years. So that was thrilling for me, because I love Bridgestone. I love David and all the people, because they're helping 55,000 kids every year through that golf tournament and the children's charities. But so that was a big deal when he left Titleist and went to Bridgestone. And slowly but surely, he continues to do everything he does. I hope his personal life is better. And I don't know. I always want Tiger to do well. It just makes me feel good. And I think golf feels better when Tiger is doing well.
Absolutely agree.
But the crowds, Jordan, were unbelievable following Scheffler and on the course there at Augusta National. What a special time. Jordan Young, golf performance coach at Jordan Young Golf, co-host of Spin on Golf Sundays on WJR. Quickly tell me how we get in touch with you at Jordan Young Golf. Is there an easy way to do that?
Yeah, just website, jordanyounggolf.com, or search me out on the web, and you can find me. I'm all over the place.
jordanyounggolf.com, and get yourself in order with your game with a good young guy. Thank you, Jordan.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
You do the same as we celebrate the second green jacket for young Scotty Scheffler at the Masters. We've got more, lots more, coming up. General Motors leaving the Rensen and moving into the old, now new Hudson site. That's a big story, and we'll have it for you coming up. Well, let's see here. I think the big story, well, the biggest story locally would be that General Motors has invited us to attend a live press event today at 4:30 with GM Chair and CEO Mary Barra and Bedrock founder and chairman Dan Gilbert. And we've already been told, this is not official, obviously, it'll be official at 4:30. We've been told that General Motors is going to move out of the Renaissance Center and move into what used to be called the Hudson site. But there's a new name, and I missed it. Did you? Mike Parsons, Daniel Mason, Rich Luzinski, the team. Yes, sir?
It's very similar to that. They kept the Hudson name in it.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, for Hudson.
I thought they were not going to do that.
Let's see. Hudson Site Development gets a new name. The development, it's called Hudson's Detroit. So, yeah, if you call it the Hudson, people know what it is. So
I guess, yeah. I thought it was going to be a bigger change than that. But the point is this, what we're being told with sources, that General Motors will leave the Renaissance Center. And then Dan Gilbert and his very successful Bedrock will start to parcel out the bits and pieces of the Renaissance Center to other companies and businesses. Somehow or another, they're going to make it palatable to more companies. That's what I'm guessing. Unless, you know, Dan could have in his back pocket another major corporation to move into downtown Detroit. You know Dan. I mean, he's always looking out for Detroit.
Yeah.
But that's the big story is that. That's a big story.
Well, and I mean, and speaking of the future of the Rensen, I mean, that's a big question mark. I hear that they've really had a hard time getting people back after the pandemic, and this is going to add to that. But it's good that the new Hudson's building has a tenant of that caliber.
A huge tenant. And it's good to see Mary Barra and Dan Gilbert work together so they're not going to leave that building stranded. That's clearly, neither one of them would have wanted that. Nobody would want that. The mayor certainly, none of us would want that. So they've worked out a plan, and I'll be all ears, like King Charles, I'll be all ears when they have their press conference at 4:30. Maybe we'll carry it live. I don't know. I don't know how that works. We'll see. Kim is just sending me the story on the the Hudson site story on the new name. But unfortunately, I had queued up some other information she had just sent me that I wanted to read. Here we go. This is what I want to say, because it may not seem important. It is. It's National Glazed Spiral Ham Day. Now, why do you think that is important to me, Mike, Danielle, or Rich?
I don't know. I choose to celebrate privately. I do love spiral glazed ham, though. I would think that'd be more a Christmas time thing, or maybe.
Here's why you should be happy, because it was on this day in 1957, Harry J. Honselaar opened the first honey bake store in Detroit, Michigan.
Another Detroit classic.
Yes.
And you don't think honey-baked ham when you think of great Detroit cuisine, but maybe we need to start doing that.
We should include it. Nothing like a good ham sandwich from time to time. He did it like most people start great companies. They believe in something. They believe in an idea that produced what is regarded today as the world's best ham. Using the highest quality bone-in smoked ham, Harry created a special curing and cooking procedure, bringing out a one-of-a-kind taste that can only be described as perfection. Sweet, crunchy glaze enhancing the flavor of the bone-in gourmet ham. Harry patented the spiral slicing process. It made honey-baked ham the easy-to-serve centerpiece. Became an instant staple at holiday dinners, Easter celebrations, meaningful meals shared and savored by family and friends. So that's good news. And Kim's update on the Boston Marathon. Cisse Lema won the pro men's division of the Boston Marathon in an unofficial time of 2 hours, 6 minutes, and 18 seconds.
Congrats. That sounds French? Is he from France?
They're usually from Kenya.
Oh, all right. That makes
sense. And that's where Helen Obiri, the victorious woman in the field, is from Kenya. 2 hours, 22 minutes, 37 seconds. 30,000 athletes participated in today's annual Rite of Spring. There you have it.
And it's great to see.
Cisse is Ethiopian.
Okay. Well, you were closer than I was. But it's good to see. I mean, this thing, you know, is just as big as it's ever been. That attack a couple years back did not deter people. And that's the best response when someone tries to do something like that.
Yeah. There was also a sidebar story of a dog that was beloved by everyone.
I'm listening.
And the dog held in its mouth little flags urging people on for the Boston Marathon to run. And unfortunately, that dog is now following the Boston Marathon as it's run in heaven.
Oh, no.
Well, it happens to all of us.
Well, dogs go to heaven.
Yeah, and not all of us will have a story about our death like this one.
Right.
The dog had a statue made, which is along the path of the Boston Marathon, and there's already another dog or two that has taken their place. You know, the runners used to stop and pet this dog.
Yeah.
It was a special dog.
There's more dogs need statues. I think there should be more statues of dogs than people.
Well, we'd be in better shape. There'd be far fewer people trying to knock over statues because they were of dogs. It appears that not one human, especially a white male, can stand to keep their statue from the old days, because in the old days, they're being judged by today's standards and they're found not to be good people.
Yeah,
but that's stupid.
You can't go back and cancel Lassie, I don't think.
No, no one would do it. They would not do it. And it reminds me of the dog of a great movie that I need Kim to quickly send me. It's Hachi or something like that. Do you remember that dog, that movie? It was a Japanese dog.
What? A Japanese dog?
Kim is
Hachi,
a
dog's tail. Would that be it?
Yes. And Hachi would go with its owner to the train station in Japan and wait there and then go back home with the owner.
Aw.
And one day the owner died.
Oh, oof.
And Hachi, for years, every day, went to the train station.
Oh.
Why are you telling us this?
It's a true story. And Hachi, I think it's Hachi, has a statue to this day. We went and saw it when we were in Japan for the Tokyo Motor Show.
Yeah,
or something.
Hachiko is its full name. He has got a Wikipedia page that I'm now reading all about.
Of course he does. Well, if you want to look for it, Hachi, I believe, right, Hachi?
The one I'm seeing, that might be the name in the movie, but his real name is Hachiko, Hachiko. But, you know, Disney, they take liberties with names and everything, so.
And that one dog complained that they used a different name,
from what I
recall. But if you haven't seen that movie, you should see that movie.
Sounds very touching.
It's Hachi, a dog's tale, so you got the right one. Kim just seconded that. It is a very touching movie. Especially if you love dogs, who doesn't? It was really something. By the way, the other day, did I ever say this? I saw the film finally called Frida.
Yes. I don't know if you said on air. You're telling us about it off air, though.
It was excellent. It was excellent and worth seeing. Let's see. This weekend, the thriller Civil War topped the box office. The film took the spot, $25.7 million in its opening weekend, the most ever for an A24 movie. I don't know what that is. And the biggest opening for an R-rated film this year.
Oh, A24 is an upstart production company, so that's probably their biggest one so far.
All right. Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, took second with $15.4 million, followed by Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire with $5.3 million. Kung Fu Panda. Okay. By the way, Hachi, A Dog's Tale. Hachi lived from November 10th, 1923 to March 8th, 1935, was a Japanese Akita dog remembered for his remarkable loyalty to his owner. And it is on Amazon Prime Video. And trust me, I'm telling you, if you like dogs, you're going to love Hachi, A Dog's Tale.
Sounds like it'll make my wife cry.
It's almost making me cry, and I'm just talking about it. But I did see it, and I did see the real Hachi statue in Japan right outside the train station. It's very cool. I've had a good life. This job has led to a very, very good life. Ho-hum. All right, we've got to carry on with this good life and this great day, sunny and beautiful on our way to 70. As we continue In Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. I have no idea if this is true or not, if this will happen. I mean, this is just my guess. We are being told that General Motors is leaving the Renaissance Center and moving into the newly named Hudson's Detroit. She and Dan Gilbert, Mary Barra and Dan Gilbert, are having a press conference. We've been invited to at 4:30. But that's what we're hearing is what's going to be the announcement that oftentimes is leaked, whether they want to or not. And would that then lead to the shortest time a building has been named a name and then changed again? I can't imagine the building will not become somehow tied in or known as GM's world headquarters. I don't know. But that would mean it wouldn't be Hudson's Detroit anymore. But maybe they don't get the naming rights to the building. Who knows what's going on? We'll have to find out at 4:30 this afternoon when Mary Barra and Dan Gilbert will have a press conference. But that's what we're hearing is GM is moving out of the Renaissance Center and into Hudson's Detroit. And will that change the name from Hudson's Detroit? We'll see. It's good news because it means GM gets out of a Renaissance Center problem, and I say that in the nicest of ways, and the Renaissance Center is not going to be left dangling because Dan Gilbert and Bedrock are going to take over filling that building, and they'll do a great job of that. At least that's my guess from everything that I'm hearing so far. We'll have it all together at 4:30 at the press conference. Meanwhile, jailhouse phone calls from James Crumbly, and you know how I feel. I never wanted to mention the Crumbly name on my show. It's inevitable. It's impossible not to. So here we go again. The jailhouse phone calls from James Crumbly to his family, friends, and attorney have been released by the Oakland County Sheriff's Office, and they give us an insight into his feelings while preparing for his trial. As you might guess, the calls show a man frustrated, angry, and lashing out, specifically lashing out at one person, Oakland County Prosecutor Karen McDonald. WJR Senior News Analyst Marie Osborne has listened to the recordings, brave woman that she is, and joins us to tell us more. Hello, Marie.
Hi, Paul. So in the courtroom, James Crumbly appeared to be attentive, and in addressing the court at his sentencing, he was respectful and told victims' families he was sorry for what his son had done. But in the jailhouse recordings released by the Sheriff's Department, we hear a very different James Crumbly, one who is angry and frustrated and, in fact, sees himself as a martyr.
It's like I told told you. I mean, we're martyrs, you know, without the whole dying aspect of it, because I don't know a better word to use. So I used the word martyr. But we're martyrs to make sure that this doesn't happen to anybody else in America again.
8 audio files were released by the sheriff's office. They're filled with expletives, and most of his ire is directed at the county prosecutor, Karen McDonald. In one call, he challenges authorities to, quote, go ahead and send the calls to McDonald.
Yeah, Karen McDonald, you're going down. Yeah, you stick at the jail. Go ahead. Record this call. Send it to Karen McDonald.
Tell her how
James Crumley's going to take her down.
What a sick idiot.
She will not have a law license when I get done with her. And like I said earlier, Karen McDonald will be working at McDonald's because she ain't going to be able to get a job anywhere else.
Now, these calls go back to 2022. The calls were not mentioned until James Crumley's trial. And the prosecutor said they raised the issue of the calls privately with the court because James Crumley was going to be sitting unshackled just a few feet away from Karen McDonald during the trial. Well, the defense has maintained, Paul, that the in-court records that the prosecutor's office strategically disclosed the phone calls during the trial just to make James Crumley look bad.
No, they didn't make James Crumley look bad. James Crumley made James Crumley look bad. He's a blithering idiot. He is. Maybe this will help them say that he's too mentally deranged to have stood trial. Maybe that's what they're going to work on in their efforts to continue to keep these people out of jail. Who knows?
Yeah, well, as we know, anything is possible in these cases. But who knows if this will be a piece of any of the further proceedings that may happen here, any of the we may be seeing that. We don't know. I thought it was very interesting that he really took it. He said in one cut that he felt like he was in the Army, you know, like he'd signed up in the Army, that he was going to go out there and fight a good fight for all the parents in America who could be victimized like this by a county prosecutor.
Wow. Talk about being completely detached from reality.
Yeah.
Apparently taking no responsibility at all for not even paying attention to his son, who was screaming for help. And the help they got him was, let's give him a gun. Let's give our unstable son, who has all of these horrific delusions and problems that he's asked us help for, and we go, oh, you'll be okay, and let's give him a gun. Yeah, that guy's a complete moron. I don't want to hear his name anymore. I know we can't avoid it, but it bothers me. It bothers me to have to hear it. Anyway, there's other news out there, Marie, and the news, two different bits. The feds have found some cash they say Kwame Kilpatrick had stashed. I didn't read the story. You're probably on top of it. I'm not. And the other story is right now, as we speak, the Golden Gate Bridge is shut down still with an anti-Israel march and blockade. Anti-Israel protests shut down Golden Gate Bridge. What an interesting time this is, don't you agree?
Oh, I think this is a very interesting time. It was a very tense weekend, all because of what's going on in the Middle East.
Right.
And, I mean, you know, a lot of us didn't go too far without at least checking into the news to see what was going on.
Right.
You know, it's interesting, too, with these types of protests here where you're inconveniencing a lot of people. You know, a lot of times people say, no, this is how you bring attention to your cause because this is the only way to do it. But it's also interesting in that you're affecting a lot of innocent people who might get mad at you.
Yeah, these
and
are
your
not,
cause.
They're not
so,
winning people over to their side doing this to them.
Right, right. It's a crapshoot when you decide to have this kind of protest. So right now it is still on a complete standstill. You know, people are just standing there. It's not violent in any way, but it is inconveniencing an awful lot of people.
Marie Osborne, WJR senior news analyst, on the story. And how about that 4:30 press conference, Marie, with General Motors and
Very
Dan Gilbert, Mary Barra?
Mm-hmm. Very big news.
Big, big story. Big story. It's really, honestly, if what we're guessing is it's the best outcome ever because it means that the Renaissance Center will not be abandoned. It'll be in the good hands of Dan Gilbert, and he knows what to do with real estate.
Well, he sure has proven that in the past, so let's hope that that may be what's in the future for the Renaissance Center. We'll see what the details are.
Well, see, she's a news person. She has to wait until it's official.
The devil's always in the details, Paul.
I understand that. I understand that as we continue in focus on WJR. Man, a lot of Aries out there, myself included, and my Sophie, who will be 21 this Friday. Is Friday the, let me just look. Where am I? That's a question I ask myself every day. Where am I? Friday is the 19th, yeah, so that's Friday, Sophie's birthday. Mine is the day before. You recall, I turned 50, and then she was born the next day, so she'll be 21 Friday, and Thursday I'll still be 50. Michael Bouchard, Sheriff Bouchard, birthday. Judge Fred Mester. There's so many. Who am I missing? All these Aries. There's a lot of them. So if it's your birthday in April, happy birthday to you. Did you know you celebrate it with the Mustang? April 17th is the Mustang's 60th birthday, if you will. And we're celebrating that with Ted Ryan, archives and historian brand manager at Ford Motor Company, as the Mustang is turning 60. Ted, nice to have you on board.
Thanks. It's nice to be on board. I'm another Aries as well. April 18th is my birthday.
The same as mine, April 18th. Yeah. Good for you. Who knew?
There we go. I turned 60 one day after the Mustang. The Mustang turned 60 on April the 17th, and it was introduced in 1964 at the New York World's Fair to what I must say was an adoring public, and it created kind of a Mustang mania where everybody had to have their Mustang, and it was quite the coming out celebration.
Well, let me tell you, I suspect you've probably had a few Mustangs in your day, but I have to tell you it was... A long time ago, Bill Ford told me to express how important and how beloved the Mustang was. The Mustang actually had Mustang clubs in countries where they couldn't even get the Mustang.
100% true. And we have been celebrating the 60th anniversary, and our global team has been calling for Mustang clubs to come together for a birthday party. And so... Over the weekend in Argentina, there were more than 1,000 people. In Brazil, more than 800 people. In Germany and England, more than 1,200 people.
Wow.
Even in Australia, where it wasn't sold for many years, they had an event and they had over 500 Mustangs. And this Wednesday in Charlotte, we're expecting about 1,000 Mustang owners. And Sunday in Los Angeles at the Fabulous Fords are expecting over 2,000 Mustangs. So it's a car that evokes a passion in people. And there aren't too many vehicles that do that. And it's so exciting to have the Mustang under our care. And frankly, as a historian of Ford, I get to tell its story over and over.
Well, good for you. A great story for sure that started at the New York World's Fair, if I'm not mistaken. Did you say that?
I did, yeah, the New York World's Fair and an exhibit. It's even cooler than that because with Ford, it always is. And an exhibit that was designed by Walt Disney World. The Ford ride was designed by Disney's Imagineers. We had some great correspondence back and forth between Ford and Disney. And there were 144 cars, and you would get in a car, and you would go through a ride, just like you're going through It's a Small World or something, at Pirates of the Caribbean and Disney World. But you would get them, and on the night of the 16th, they switched out 24 of those and converted them, and they put Mustangs in. So instead of the Falcons and the Galaxies, you know, 24 were changeover for Mustangs, and they were incredibly popular from the very beginning.
We've talked before about the Ford Mustang appearing in something like over 5,000 films and television shows. Certainly one of the most iconic cars in Hollywood history, from boy, that Steve McQueen famous chase in Bullet. It was Mustangs in the Transformers. Mustangs have left a lasting impression on audiences worldwide. And now, with these enthusiasts in clubs and this global fan base in over 50 countries, the one thing that it makes it difficult to do is for you guys to make any decisions with a vast change in the Mustang. And you did that with the Mach-E. That was probably a scary moment, but it turned out just great.
It turned out I have actually got a Mach-E in my driveway, and it's a performance car. It's a zippy car at the same time. But yes, you're right. And that did cause gnashing of teeth and consternation. But conversely, our chairman, Jim Farley, said recently, I think like 2 weeks ago, that as long the Mustang will always be available with a V8 option. And so, yes, we're making the Mach-E, but we're also making the Dark Horse with its V8 power and the GTD with its insane horsepower. And we're racing it, and the GT3 is going to return to Le Mans. Ford is going to return to Le Mans again, but this time we're going to do it in a Mustang. So it is our flagship performance vehicle. But it's also a vehicle that can appeal to everybody. Its initial price, Paul, was $2,368. FOB Detroit. I had to Google what FOB Detroit meant, and meant basically the shipping cost. But that was about $20,000. Well, you can get a entry-level Mustang today for not much more than that. I think it starts right around $30,000 for one of the V4 EcoBoosts. But I drove a V4 EcoBoost, and believe me, it had plenty of power. It had enough power. I wouldn't let my teenage boys drive it. So you can get a Mustang variant for whatever type of car you're looking for.
Well, I have to tell you, Ted Ryan, you burst with enthusiasm and pride, and well, you should, and all of the hardworking men and women of Ford Motor Company, because it is one of the very few iconic American-made cars out there that continues to live up to all of the expectations and, frankly, go over expectations for people. Certainly, I have friends who have the electric Mustang, the Mach-E, and they love it. And so, you know, I'm always going to lean toward the gasoline engine because call me old-fashioned, but I love that Jim Farley says we're going to keep that V8 option available forever. And that's a nice promise. And I congratulate you, Jim Farley, Bill Ford, and again, all those hardworking men and women at Ford Motor Company. Tell me the very latest again, Ted Ryan, on parties that Ford people should make their way to.
Well, if you're in Charlotte on Wednesday, head over to the Charlotte Motor Speedway. You'll need to register in advance, but there will be a huge celebration there. We're not doing much in the Dearborn area, but I will have to say, hardworking men and women, we built an exhibit at the Flat Rock plant where the Mustangs are assembled 2 weeks ago, and it was so exciting to bring a Mustang exhibit to the men and women who actually are building our cars. And then yesterday in Windsor, we had an exhibit for the engine plant where the Mustang engines are manufactured. So in our archives, we're trying to support the people that are building these cars. And the last big event is in L.A. So hop a plane, go to L.A. and go to Fabulous Fords, where we expect more than 2,000 Mustangs to be part of the big array of 10,000 Fords that are gathering on Sunday, April 21st.
Thanks for sharing all of this, and an advanced birthday wish to you on April 18th.
Same to you. I've never met somebody who had the shared my birthday. The midnight ride of Paul Revere was the only famous thing that I could come up with typically. So,
if you're searching for something to give me, I'd say a white GTD Mustang or the Dark Horse, either one. Would be just.
I'll put you on the list.
Would be so fabulous, and I would say no. Yes. Thank you, Ted.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Ted Ryan, archives historian, brand manager, Ford. Lots to celebrate as the Mustang turns 60. We continue in Focus on WJR. Well, you heard it here first, not because I did some kind of great reporting of news or snooping. I just kind of put two and two together, and after hearing a couple of things, we announced an hour ago that it looked as if General Motors would be moving their world headquarters to the new Hudson's building, and then the redevelopment of the Renaissance Center with Bedrock is starting to get reported as a fact. There is a press conference. General Motors, dear Paul W. Smith, General Motors invites you to attend a live press event today, Monday, April 15th at 4:30 p.m. with GM Chair and CEO Mary Barra and Bedrock Founder and Chairman Dan Gilbert, signed by Glenna Young. And what's that? Okay. I think he was telling someone else something. But we have reached out to Mary Barra. There's no way, no chance in hell she's going to talk to us before they officially make the announcement. But it seems very clear. And it's all good news. It's all win-win. First of all, we knew General Motors had their hands full with the Renaissance Center. And now they'll be able to move into the Hudson's building. The question is, will that be the shortest-lived name? They just changed the name to the Hudson's building, or Detroit Hudson's or something. I lost that piece, but Hudson's Detroit or something like that. Will it become known as the GM building? Well, it will be whether they call it that or not, if that's General Motors World Headquarters, which it appears it will be. But my point is, by getting Dan Gilbert involved, we know that the Renaissance Center is not going to become a big hulk like, sadly, for example, the Kmart World Headquarters in Troy for years. Can you imagine if we had that big, beautiful building sitting mostly empty on the water? Well, it's not going to happen. Something good is going to happen there, or Dan Gilbert wouldn't be a part of it, and he is. So anyway, that's it. GM to move Detroit headquarters to the new Hudson's building. But there's much more to the announcement, and it'll come up at 4:30. And it includes Bedrock founder and chairman Dan Gilbert and GM chair and CEO Mary Barra. That's pretty doggone exciting news to take our mind off all the rest of the news, Chris Renwick, don't you think?
Yeah. You know what my question is, Paul?
What is your question?
I'm interested to know if, so as I understand it, GM moves to the new Hudson facility, and then they're working with Bedrock to then rehabilitate the Rensen. All right, fine. Does General Motors plan on moving back to the Renaissance Center, or are they planning on using that for different purposes? That's what I haven't been able to put together.
We don't have any official word on any of that. But I will give you my unofficial word on GM moving back into the Renaissance Center. Here's my unofficial word. Oh, hell no.
Yeah.
Oh, hell no. That's not going to happen. If they're going to move into the Hudson's building,
yeah,
they're in the Hudson's building.
Yeah.
I do believe they will, because they care. They're good neighbors. They care about the Renaissance Center. But they were smart enough. I don't know who contacted whom. But they're smart enough to get Dan Gilbert and Dan Gilbert's team involved.
Sure.
So that's all I know. And I don't know at all until 4:30 it becomes official. But for now, I see General Motors moving out of the Renaissance Center and Dan Gilbert and Bedrock moving into, I don't like to use the word rehabilitate, but it is rehabilitating.
Yeah, they're going to give it a facelift.
They need to give it a facelift. It needs to be a building that people look forward to going to. And that can happen. It could also, there'd be some really good-looking apartments in a building like that on the water.
No doubt about it.
In other cities, people pay big money to live on the water in a big housing development. And it's plenty of space there to have housing as well as business.
Mm-hmm.
But this is all just, we're just guessing right now until the announcement at 4:30. And I presume they're going to tell us everything that they know right now in that press conference.
Sure.
There may be other things they say, we're not sure about that, or we're looking into this, or any number of things. Maybe, knowing Dan Gilbert and Mary Barra, they may have an announcement as to who's already committed to go into that building.
Yeah.
I see it as a bunch of smaller places taking smaller footprints. I see it as some wonderful housing on the water. But you never know. They may come in and say, well, IBM decided to move one of their, big offices here. But I'm not holding my breath.
Isn't it crazy, too? I mean, like 5 years ago, right, pre-pandemic, the Rensen was jam-packed with GM employees. And now look, it is, to a certain extent, a downsize, right, to Hudson. They don't have as many people working in office at the same time. It's just crazy how few years change.
Things. When Matt Cullen set that whole thing up, it was a brilliant move for General Motors. And to get rid of the berm so that we all realized, wait a second, there's a riverfront here. can you imagine? We lived without it, and a lot of people didn't know it was there.
Crazy.
So Matt Cullen did the right thing when he did it, but that was years ago. And times have certainly changed. And General Motors has to change with the times like all of us do. You ready for your show?
Yeah, looking forward to it. We got a lot of stuff to do today.
There's
big news
a lot
down.
Going yeah. on. JR Afternoon with Chris Renwick coming up right after the news, which is next. Stream us, WJR.com, the WJR app. Get our podcasts, too, at WJR.com. We miss you when you don't listen in. I know you can't always be here noon to 2. Thanks to the team, Mike Parsons, Daniel Mason, Rich Luzinski. And to you, on your way to making each and every day count, because each day really is a gift. Go out and enjoy the sunshine. Regards, Paul W. Smith.